Okay. Good afternoon to everybody, and we're going to talk today about something a bit less controversial than last week. I decided to kind of change the theme a little, but this is nevertheless an extremely critical contemporary issue for some people, which is the issue of bat mitzvah. This is one of these changing issues which, as time rolls on, facts on the ground are actually altering. It was pretty much unheard of for people in the Orthodox community to celebrate bat mitzvahs for 30, 40 years ago. It was very rare. And now it's very much more common. It's not totally done. But I want to show you here how various different people in the Jewish world, in certainly the Orthodox world, have dealt with this issue over the last 50 years, notwithstanding that it comes unquestionably from the Reform movement. The Reform movement brought in this idea of having, just like you have a bar mitzvah, so you have a bat mitzvah. And the Orthodox world has had to try and decide how to react to that. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it a good thing but becomes a bad thing because it was introduced by people that we don't want to copy? Or is that just silly? Or does it have intrinsic value and the Reform had a good idea? So if the Reform had a good idea, that's a great idea. Let's not tar it with negative connotations just because it came from there. How did they react? Let's have a look now. So what I want to do with you very briefly for the first, 10 minutes, a bit less maybe, is just show you where the concept of bar and bat mitzvah comes from, bichlal, in general, which is perhaps not so well known. And none of you heard this class before, right? I don't think it's a long time since I've given this class here, so I don't think any of you were here when I last gave it. Take one of these, that's great. Says the Mishnah. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos gives various different dates for important birthdays. Says the Mishnah, Hu haya oimer ben chamesh shanim lemikra, 5 years old, the person starts learning chumash, ben eser lemishnah, 10 for Mishnah, ben shlosh esrei lemitzvah. At 13, that is the time that a person enters the world of mitzvahs. This seems to be taken for granted by the Mishnah. It goes on to quote various other dates. Chamesh Yisrei LeTalmud, 15 years old to start learning Gemara. Shmoneh Yisrei LeChuppah, 18 years old to get married. We don't stick to these dates really in any way today, apart from the 13. We don't start learning Chumash at 5 and Mishnah at 10 and Talmud at 15. The question is, why not? Should we? There are some schools that have gone back to this method a little bit more. But the one thing which everybody does have is Shlosh Yisrei LeMitzvahs. 13 is for mitzvahs. Rashi explains that we learn this partly out of a posuk. If you look at number 2, Ben Shlosh Yisrei LeMitzvahs, Dichsev Ish or Isha, Ki Yasu V'Kol Chatas Adam. The posuk says in order to be liable for doing an aveira, you have to be an Ish or an Isha. You have to be a man. Or you have to be a woman. You're only become a man when you're 13. How do you know? Says the Rashi, and he brings a posuk from the story of Levi and Shimon, who go and attack the city of Shechem. It says, each man took his sword. If you do the calculations, do the maths, you'll see that Levi was 13 years old, and he's called an Ish. So you know that someone who's 13, at least, is called an Ish, and therefore we learn it from there. There is another angle to this as well, which I'm not going to get into in detail, that in fact, and I brought you in source number 3, you can read it in your own time, in fact there is a requirement, according to the Torah definition of a mitzvah, that a person not only has to be a certain age, but has to have a certain level of development. If a boy is 13 or a girl is 12, we'll see where 12 comes from in a minute. If a boy or a girl have reached the age of majority, but they haven't reached the age of puberty, then halachically they are actually still considered to be a child. For 90% or 99% even of mitzvahs, this is irrelevant, because for all mitzvahs derabbanon, we assume that when a girl hits 12 or a boy hits 13, they have reached the age of puberty, which is the majority of children have reached that. So when a boy comes to daven from the omud or to lead the prayers or whatever it is to lane, so we don't mind, because that's all dinei derabbanon, that's all rabbinic mitzvahs. If ever it turns out that a boy has to read from a piece of the Torah where there's actually a Torah obligation to read, for example, on Purim, to read Parshat Zachor, which is a Torah obligation, then we do not allow bar mitzvah boys to read unless we know for a fact that they have reached the age of puberty, which basically means we don't let them read because we don't want to start differentiating between people and other people. So we basically give, and that actually happened to my own son, his bar mitzvah. He was reading Parashas Para, which is a Sufik Doraisa. There are those people who say it is a Doraisa, and the Rav said, well, the minhag is we don't give a bar mitzvah boy Parshas Para, someone else will read Parshas Para, he'll read the rest of the Parsha. It's just a standard practice. This is where it's coming from. Either a boy or a girl have to have reached the age of puberty as well as 12 or 13 for Torah mitzvahs. I suppose this would apply if they wanted to make Kiddush for you on Friday night or something, which is a Torah mitzvah. You would have to know that. Anyway, it doesn't matter. You have to have at least 13 or 12, even if you reach puberty at 10 or 11. You still have to hit the years, which kind of brings us on to the next point, which the Rosh says that at the end of the day, all of these shiurim, all of these sort of amounts or ages or sizes or anything the size of a sukkah, the size of a matzah, they're all what we call halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. They came down from Moses on Sinai. It was part of that body of law which just gets transmitted through the generations, and therefore at the end of the day we know 13 is for a boy, halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, as well as maybe from this pasuk in number 2. What about 12 for a girl? So again, the Mishnayot clearly say that women reach the age of majority earlier than men. Where did the Mishnah get that idea from? If you flip over to page 2 for a second, you'll see when it comes to the creation of Chava and the way that the Torah presents the relationship between men and women, it says in number 6, Vayiven Hashem Elokim Es Hatzela. Hashem, now this word Vayiven is an interesting word. What does Vayiven mean? What is a built? Literally, it comes from the word built. But the word ben or ven, let's get rid of some of this, has also another, where's the dude? Oh.
Under your paper.
Under my what? The word ben not only is the root of the word bona, which means build, okay?
Oh.
Okay? Bona, which is from Vayiven, but it's also the root of the word bina. And bina, of course, means understanding. So when it says in the Pasuk 6, in number 6, Vayiven Hashem Elokim Es Hatzela Asher Lakach Min Adam LeIsha, he made it into a woman. Says the Gemara Nida in number 7, El Divrei Rebbe Amar Rav Chisda, my time of the Rebbe. Why does Rebbe hold that women have an earlier age of majority? As it says, Diksiva Yiven Hashem Elokim Es Hatzela Melamit Shenosan Hakadosh Baruch Hu Bina Yisera. The word bina is associated in the pasuk with women, and therefore the Gemara learns from that that women have a bina yisera, an extra level of bina, yoseh mivish, more than a man has. What does that extra level of bina mean? It doesn't mean that women are cleverer than men. I hate to break it to you, that would be terribly sexist to say such a thing. What it does mean, however, and which is evident and obvious, not only from pasuk but from reality, is number 8, bina yisera, says the Chidushi Aritzva, shema maharis lahavin, that she matures at an earlier age. And we see that women, of course, what we're really trying to get at for bar or bas mitzvah is mental maturity. At what point can you be considered to be mentally aware that what you're doing is responsible, etc.? That's what we call das. Women reach that level a little bit earlier than men, which we see also women physically mature earlier than men, and women emotionally mature and mentally mature somewhat earlier than men. Of course, there are exceptions. There are men who are mature, they are the extreme exception, and there are women who are immature, but on the whole, you take a bunch of 12, 13 year old girls, they are a little bit more mature than a bunch of 12, 13 year old boys, and therefore in halacha, these things come also from the psukim, like Vayiven, also number 9, Be'isha Bas Gimel, says the Ma'aril, an old source from medieval times. Bas Gimel, when a girl is 3, different stages, Bas Yud Aleph, 11, Bas Yud Bet, 12, Kol Hani Hilcha, so they are all halacha, which means from Moshe Brit Sinai, Kakol Shi'urin Daraisa, like all the other Torah Shi'urin. Now, therefore, it's clear that a boy has a bar mitzvah at 13, a girl has a bat mitzvah at 12. That's clear. And the actual date at which they become bar bas mitzvah is equally exciting, if you like, equally relevant from a Torah perspective for both. They both become chayav in mitzvahs. Don't forget, women are chayav in 99% of all the same mitzvahs that men are chayav in. There is almost no differences in terms of their halachic obligation in mitzvahs. And therefore, there's no reason, in theory, why girls should not celebrate a bas mitzvah. Where do we find a mitzvah to celebrate a bar mitzvah? So I'll see that in a minute. Melissa, what were you going to say?
I know it's probably jumping the gun, but why is it that if the reform movement created bar mitzvahs, that you're going to ask me to
Well, that's what we're going to discuss. What is bizarre is that the Reform Movement chose to create bat mitzvah at the age of 13. That is, it strikes me as being something of a completely own goal. I don't know if you get the rest of the own goal terminology. An own goal in football is when you kick in soccer the ball by mistake back into your own goal and you give a point to the other side by mistake. If you want to try and achieve some level of gender equality, because you're coming from the perspective that traditional Judaism is sexist, which I suppose the Reform Movement is coming from, why on earth you would take a system whereby women are given more maturity, responsibility, and adult life, and then dumb it down to a level where it's the same as the boys? It just strikes me to be doing exactly what you're trying to not do, which is to make women the same as men just because that's where men are. Why not make the boys 12? If they'd have made the boys 12, I would have understood. It would have been wrong, but I would have understood. But make the girls 13. I mean, if anyone knows anything about the Reform Movement can explain to me, I never researched this matter, where the origins of that idea are, I just think it's bizarre.
It's just not equal. It's just equal, right?
But why make it equal and dumb the girls down?
I do know why. I can't remember it now, but I have
so tell me.
With us, I'll get back to you.
Because I'd like to know. I'm sure there was someone who gave it some reason, but it seems to me to be a bit strange. Now, without going into all the details, we learn that there is an interesting Gemara in number 10, which I'm not going to get into. Yes, Emily.
How can you say, where is this statement coming from, the statement you made that women and men are obligated 99%?
It's a statement of fact. There are 613 mitzvahs. Count which ones women are exempt from, and maybe it's not 99, maybe it's 96, assuming for 3%, but it's like, you know, in terms of the vast majority of mitzvahs, there is no distinction between women and men. Positive time-bound mitzvahs constitute the tiny, tiniest minority of mitzvahs, in addition to which women are actually obligated in many time-bound positive mitzvahs, like Shabbos, and Yom Tov, and Matzah, okay? Added to which women are permitted, even if not obligated, in almost all of the others, like Sukkah, and Lulav, and Shofar, and you can really count on two fingers the ones that women are actually prevented from doing, which is basically Tzitzit and Tefillin. The rest of the mitzvahs that are in, there are about 300.
Being prevented from doing it is not the same thing as obligated in doing it.
No, I agree. But I'm saying if you count up the mitzvahs, look at all the mitzvahs in the Torah, all the mitzvahs of Ein Arba Chavero, all the mitzvahs of theft, and all the mitzvahs of honesty, and all the mitzvahs of how you act, and all the mitzvahs. There's no difference. There's no. Gender has been pushed to the front of the agenda, no pun intended, because public Jewish worship has taken the central role in people's Judaism. Therefore, people assume that having an aliyah in shul is a central issue in Judaism. And obviously, you know and I know that it's really not. It's peripheral when it comes to Judaism. But people who've forgotten all the rest of the mitzvahs have made that the main thing, and that's become a big issue. I'm not saying it's a non-issue. I'm just saying it's a much smaller issue than people really think it is.
No.
Most people have never heard of most of the 613 mitzvahs. If they actually went through them and looked at them, they'd realise there was total gender equality.
But about half of them are unemployed.
Correct. So fine. So 300. Yeah, fine. Let's go on. Source number 10 is an interesting source from the Gemara, which I will just summarise. I'm not going to read all the way through, which is there was a particular rabbi who was blind, and he was there was the question halacha to whether blind people are obligated to do mitzvahs. And he indicates that he would like to be obligated to do mitzvahs. And if you can prove to him that a blind person is obligated to do mitzvahs, then he will throw a party, make a kiddush, and make a general celebration. Again, introducing the idea that when someone discovers that they're obligated in mitzvahs, then that is a source of simcha, that is a source of enjoyment, that is a source of celebration. From this, we see even more so a bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah, who becomes obligated in mitzvahs. Rav Yosef was only interested to know whether he always was obligated. He just didn't know. Now, here, someone who yesterday was not obligated, today is yes obligated. The idea of celebrating that is very central. We love the fact that we're obligated. We love the fact that we're Avdei Hashem, that we have some level of responsibility in the world, because at the end of the day, responsibility is what makes a person feel good about themselves, and therefore bar or bat mitzvah is clearly a source of celebration. Now, that is all by way of introduction. So how do we react to bat mitzvah? So let me, I've translated most of these sources into English actually, I'm not sure why, but it's similar, this paper that has a lot of English on it. Maybe that means you can read a bit and save my voice. Yes.
Okay, so they define the age of reaching Bar Mitzvah when you hit puberty?
No, it's defined as an age of 12 or 13, which on a Torah level also has to coincide with puberty as well. Otherwise you wait till they hit puberty.
Did Chazal make that age?
No, that's Doraita.
12 or 13?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It's either learned from Sukkim, or it's probably more likely Halacha L'Moshe Misina. It's part of the, just like a kezayit of matzah is Doraita, the size of a sukkah is Doraita. These are all these limits and ages and qualifications
so
are Doraita.
It's not problematic if you hit puberty then before the age of 12 or 13 and you're not keeping
No, not at all. Okay. You only become Bar Bas Mitzvah when you're 12 years old.
Okay.
Or 13 years old. Okay. Yeah? Let's go on. There are basically three approaches in the last 50 years as to how to deal with Bat Mitzvah. Approach number one is from Rav Avadya Yosef. Look over, please. We'll get straight into this now. Look over on page 3 at Rav Avadya Yosef's Tshuva in source number 15. You can look at the other things yourself. You see, I've summarized them. It's just basically giving the idea that it's a mitzvah to make a bar mitzvah celebration, and etc., etc. Somebody, please read for me the English in source number 15. We'll see, Melissa. We'll see what Rav Avadya Yosef says. Rav Avadya, of course, is one of the leading poskim in the Sephardi world, from Baghdad originally, Baghdadi origin, and he lives just down the road from you. He lives on Rehovot Kavlan. And he's now very elderly, but he's one of the greatest halachic minds in the last 500 years, and he lives around the corner in Har Nof. So your grandchildren will look at you with awe and wonder when you tell them that you lived up the road from Rav Avadya Yosef. They will not believe. It's like saying I lived up the road from Rashi, kind of thing. Like, you know, they will look at you, but you will tell them that that's what you did. Not entirely in those terms. You can go to his shul, and I'm not sure how easy it would be to get a private meeting. You might have to, you know a few people. He doesn't just, he's not just open to the public like that. No, he's not. Yes, including quite a number of secret service Israeli.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, he's a controversial guy. He's the spiritual mentor of the Shas party, which means that he is involved in politics, which means that he's got enemies. Even the other Shasniks, when I go to Mariv at night sometimes, Eli Yishai, who is the head of the Shas party, is davening Mariv next to me, and there's a like very conspicuous looking, you know, dark suited. You know, guy standing there with a little piece in his ear.
So if I knocked on his door, I wouldn't be able to. Just
you have to with all these people. You have to go through the son, the son-in-law, whatever it is. If you need to see these people, you can see them.
No, I know. I'm just curious. Like, I want.
You can't just hang out with them.
I just want to know what would happen.
It's not a photo opportunity. Yeah. You know, one of my rabbonim said it when he was a young man in yeshivas Kol Torah. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. An American tourist, a from guy came up to him and said if he could have a photo taken with him. So Shlomo Zalman was a very sweet, nice person. He had very, you know, he was very ben al chaver oriented. He said, yeah, of course, no problem, whatever. And when this guy went away, so he said to my Rav, he said, you know, when Mashiach comes, there'll be a lot of Americans that like the fact that they can have a photo taken with Mashiach. Can I have a photo with Mashiach? Like, he said, like, why? Why would you want a photo with a Rav? Because it's like Disneyland, that's why. Okay, here's me with Mickey Mouse, and here's me with Rav Shlomo. Yeah?
You will be discussing about the controversy between brachot, going to Rabbi to get a bracha?
Not today.
No, not today, but...
We can talk about this when we talk about rationalist and non-rationalist approach to Jewish life. Everybody treat... No, we can do that in one of our in fact, yeah, we will, because I have a whole class about astrology and it comes up in that. So we will talk about it. Everybody today, there is a piece in today's Jerusalem Post I noticed by Shmuley Boteach. I know I'm not meaning to be his personal mouthpiece, but I noticed today he happens to have a piece. Every time I'm about to leave a class, he has a piece on it. He happens to have a piece today about blasting the Torah codes, teaching the Torah codes. I actually completely agree with everything he said. If you don't know what the Torah codes are, then that's good for you. Good for you.
No, it's not.
But it's let's go on. Number 15. What does Rav Avadia Yosef have to say about Bat Mitzvah? Yeah.
Accordingly, it appears that a girl, too, who is not 12 and is obligated in all mitzvot that women are obligated in, becomes a person who now performs mitzvot as one who is commanded. It is therefore fitting to celebrate her entry into mitzvot with a meal of thanks and joy, and in such matters, there is no distinction between boys and girls when they come of age.
So his basic starting position is, well, why would there be a difference? What, boys, girls, mitzvahs? All Jews, of course, if you celebrate for a guy, you'll celebrate for a girl. I mean, that does not stand to reason. Carry on.
The Gaon Rav Yosef Chaim writes to this effect in his book, Ben
Ishchai. Now, Rav Yosef is very much coming from the school of the Ben Ishchai, who was the Baghdad Rav at the end of the last century. Carry on. Or the 1800s. Yeah.
That even though there was no minhag to make a meal for a girl at Bat Mitzvah, nevertheless, she should dress in her Shabbat clothes and be happy on that day that she merited to come of age in Mitzvah.
So it's interesting. The Ben Ishchai says, we don't have a minhag in Baghdad to celebrate Bat Mitzvah. So you might think Rav Avadia is going to say, oh, so you see, that we don't celebrate Bat Mitzvah. He actually learns from those words of the Ben Ishchai exactly the opposite. Carry on.
It appears in his words that there were to be a minhag to make a celebration meal for a girl, just as it is made for a boy when he reaches Bar Mitzvah, such a thing would be entirely proper and the meal would be considered a suitable.
In other words, the Ben Ish Chai says, we don't happen to have a minhag to make a bat mitzvah, from which Rav Avadia learns, well, fine, so they didn't have a minhag. He's saying that because they didn't have a minhag. But if you did have a minhag, that would be lovely, very nice. And he considers it a sudat mitzvah, which means the very fact that the girl is turning 12 is itself a sudat mitzvah, just the way that if the very fact that a boy is turning 13 would be a sudat mitzvah. So Rav Avadia seems to come to this matter with an approach, purely halachic approach, which is, there is no distinction, there's no reason why you shouldn't celebrate them. Now, of course, Rav Avadia is not coming from a background where there's a reform movement, you know, barking at his heels, trying to change Judaism. The Sephardi world never had a reform movement, okay? That's the Sephardi world, to a large degree, never had the Holocaust either. I mean, they did in some parts, in maybe North Africa and Greece a little bit, but the whole psychological state of the Sephardi world is radically different from the psychological state of the Ashkenazi world, which through the 20th century, 19th to 20th century, went through, you know, the Haskalah and the reform movement and the Holocaust, and therefore there's a very interesting difference of approach to many, many different points. Yes, Sarah. Yeah, he's not discussing that. He certainly would not allow that. A girl getting up to read from the Torah, there are separate issues, which is women's aliyot, and that comes under a separate category of discussion, which we can certainly discuss, and we can get into that. But it's really not related to this in a sense, because aliyah, there's no reason why, by the way, there's no reason why a bar mitzvah boy should have an aliyah. The two are completely unconnected. I mean, the bar mitzvah boy, and it used to be in the old days, they didn't necessarily have an aliyah. You become bar mitzvah, there's a large number of secular Jewish people who feel that if you didn't have a bar mitzvah somehow, you're not Jewish. I've come across this a lot. This is obviously simply just a misunderstanding. A bar mitzvah is something that happens automatically. The second you hit 13, although it's interesting, there's a big...
Boys don't have to actually read from the Torah?
Not at all. It's just a customary way of showing that yesterday you couldn't do this and today you can do this, so let's call you up to show that you're now Bar Mitzvah. But if you never did that, it has absolutely no bearing on your status or adulthood whatsoever. There is actually, I'll maybe just mention to you, a debate in Halacha as to whether you become Bar or Bat Mitzvah on the day of the anniversary of your birth, or at the time of day that you were born, in 24-hour increments from the moment you were born. For example, let's say you were born at 6 o'clock in the evening in the summer on the 1st of Tishri. Okay? Do you become Bat Mitzvah of Erev Rosh Hashanah, like when Rosh Hashanah comes in, even though you were only born at the end of Rosh Hashanah? So that does not matter, and you actually become Bat Mitzvah or Bar Mitzvah from the beginning of the day of your Bar Mitzvah. For some people, this has an implication. If you happen to be born like I was, on Yom Kippur. Okay, so I was born at the very towards the very end of Yom Kippur. It didn't bother me. I was born towards the very end of Yom Kippur. I was born about 6:15 on Yom Kippur, about an hour before the end of Yom Kippur. And the question is, when I turned 13 on Yom Kippur, so did I have to fast from the beginning of Yom Kippur? Or really, Minat Torah, did I only have an obligation to fast from 6:15 till 7:15 on Yom Kippur? Because that's when I actually hit 13. The way we paskin is that we paskin like the beginning of the day. You actually become bar mitzvah from the beginning of the day. We paskin that, I think, not only to be strict, but also to be lenient. Let's say a bar mitzvah, kind of bar mitzvah will make kiddush for you, which is a doraisa mitzvah, on Friday night when he just became bar mitzvah. So even though he was only born at 4 o'clock in the afternoon 13 years ago, so that will be a leniency. But as far as I'm aware, we do allow that. I need to check that in halacha, but I think we allow that. But that's very interesting. Some people who are born on funny days, I like having a birthday on Yom Kippur. I think it's a very good day for a birthday. Yes, people do, people who know. And it's a good day for contemplating the world and your life and what you've achieved and what you hope to achieve. A motzi Yom Kippur. My wife makes me a cake with a candle in it. Yes.
So
let's say we do have a bat mitzvah male,
is it regarded as sudat mitzvah?
For him it will be, yes, absolutely.
Even if it's not male, let's say in your family you've never done it before and you start for your daughter you have a bat mitzvah.
It's not the minhag that makes it a sudat mitzvah, it's the fact that she's becoming bat mitzvah that makes it a sudat mitzvah. Yeah.
What are the implications of this of someone who's born on like other?
Oh, there's a whole bunch of, if you're into that kind of thing, calendrical conundrums, there's a whole bunch of people, you know, the cases, you have twins, right. One of which is born on the end of this and beginning of that, and the one who's younger has his bar mitzvah a month earlier than the one who, you can get into all that if you want, but I'm not getting into that.
But technically speaking, from a point of view of, like, if you're going to say a year is X amount of days,
that
kind of stuff.
Right, becomes relevant. Absolutely. It also becomes relevant in time zones. What if you were born in America and you live in Australia? Do you have to add, like 12 hours? I'm not getting there now. Although I did hear of an interesting case this week of an identical twin that got married. And he had to go through quite a complicated rigmarole to try and prove that he was actually the one that she thought he was. Because if you think about it, if you have an identical twin brothers or sisters, how do you know that you're marrying the right one? Quite a problem. These two, apparently, were totally. Right, 16. Now, that's the first approach. Emily, could I trouble you for a refill of my just water, please? Thank you very much. That's the first approach. Shh, Rav Avadi Yosef. Now let's look at Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein is, of course, an Ashkenazi. He died about 25 years ago. He was the leader. Just water, please. No, just fill it up with water, thanks. He takes a much more negative approach to bat mitzvah. Much more negative. Rav Moshe Feinstein, in America. Let's have a look. Who's going to read 16? Yes, please.
The correct approach, in my view, is that there is no noticeable practical difference between the girl now she's over bat mitzvah and when she was a child. This is not the same as with a boy, with a difference very marked in that we now join him into anything that needs minyan of 10 or 3. For a mere awareness of difference with a girl with no noticeable practical difference, we cannot make a meal or celebration, even though for her personally there is great joy.
So Rav Moshe is focusing much more on the practical distinction, thank you. If you're going to make a public celebration, that's a public celebration of a public issue. It's not a public issue when a girl turns 12. It's not. It's a private issue. It's a big issue, but it's a private issue. Because those few public mitzvahs that we do, and again, most of the mitzvahs are not public mitzvahs, but those ones which we do, boys, obviously, the minute they're 13, can be part of a minyan, and it is a public celebration. You've got another guy that joins the minyan. In some communities, that's the difference between having a minyan and not having a minyan. Therefore, he says, you make a celebration. But for girls, he's not doing it down, but he's saying there's no need to make a public affair of it. Carry on, number 17.
Even if she gives a public divar Torah, there is no particular merit in this, since she is exempt from learning Torah.
Now that's a little bit on the harsh side, and there's an agenda behind this particular tshuva, which is he really doesn't like bat mitzvah because it's coming from reform, and he'll say that explicitly in a minute. Now he's not trying to imply here that women have no role in learning Torah. We'll see clearly that women do, and Rav Moshe agrees with that. But the using the argument that it is a public celebration because she's publicly teaching Torah. Torah, it said he's not going to wash the same for a girl as it is for a boy, and that probably makes sense. Yeah.
But it's not true that she's exempt from learning Torah.
That's true. She's not exempt from learning all parts.
Torah, about something that's actually relevant, like, you know,
Shabbos. 100%. So you have to understand with a tshuva, tshuva is not a halacha sefer. A tshuva is a response to a real question in a real scenario from a real person. Therefore, what drives a tshuva is not only the strict, technical, abstract halachic implications, but there are also meta-halachic implications. Halacha is not just, you know, I mean, depending on how you view halacha. I'm sure Rav Soloveitchik would disagree with this on some level. But halacha, in most analyses, is not just abstract reality. It is also real life. Do we want to encourage a practice which copies the reform movement, or is this going to be one of many? Because by the time you look around, it's going to be women's minyanim, and then it's going to be this, it's going to be that. Now, is that where Rav Moshe is coming from, or is it not? He seems not to like the idea. He's going to say explicitly now, because it comes from reform, and therefore you may find him taking a harsher line on some other issues, which maybe in another context he would be much more open to. Don't forget, in most halakhic questions, there's a range of potential opinions, from lenient to strict. Which one are you going to choose? Sometimes that's obvious because the halacha goes one way or the other. Sometimes it depends on what's pushing you in which direction. Okay? And they may be what I call meta-halachic. You know what I'm talking about by that? Like more global, where do we want the community to go? Mm-hmm. Where do we want Judaism to be in 50 years? These are bigger questions which are also part of the halachic system, which may not be part of the technical. Let me give you an extreme example. Technically, halachically, technically, it is much better for men, Jewish men, who are not religious, to marry non-Jewish women than it is to marry Jewish women who don't go to the mikveh. If you want to make a technical analysis of the aveira that they're doing if they sleep with a non-Jewish woman, it is technically less serious than if they sleep with a Jewish woman who goes to the mikveh. But who doesn't go to the mikveh? Because if you sleep with a non-Jewish woman, so that's an issa daraisa. If you sleep with a Jewish woman who has not gone to the mikveh, that's an issa kares. There's an issa kares. It's very serious. Now, everybody knows that, of course, it is much better for Jewish men to marry Jewish women, even if they're secular, okay, than to marry non-Jewish women. Of course it is. Why? Because there's an overriding meta-halachic reason that Jewish people should marry Jewish people, irrespective of the individual affairs that they do, which they may not even know about, which are not going to be chayav kares if they don't do it on purpose. You know, your person's only chayav kares if they did something on purpose with full knowledge of what they did. And therefore, clearly the technical agendas are often overridden by more global agendas. And that's only right and proper. That's part of the halachic system too. It's not just people making it up. It's people understanding where the community needs to go. Am I making a... So, okay, that's an extreme example, but carry on. Let's see what he has to say in 18.
For the wife that went to the mikveh, except she never ever went, or she didn't go... Like,
she never went. If she, no, no, if at any stage she menstruates and then doesn't go to the mikveh, she is nida until such time as she does, even if it's 5 months, 5 years, or 20 years. That doesn't go away, doesn't get less. Okay, then she goes to the mikveh, then it stops.
Wait, what happens to a child who's born in Nida? It's not related. Nothing happens to a child that is born in Nida. There's no change of status.
In fact, Rav Moshe has a sort, has a whole source about there. There's a tshuva that he has, a boy who was worried about the fact that he's marrying a girl whose parents are not religious. This is now completely commonplace. Many people marry families who the parents are not religious or were not knowledgeable and they didn't go to the mikveh. He's worried about the fact that his wife-to-be was born from a relationship which was a neither relationship. And Rav Moshe basically tells him not to worry about it. I mean, he goes around it in different ways to show, well, maybe she did go to the mikveh, she went swimming, I don't know. Yeah, but anyway, he says that at the end of the day, it's more important that she has nice middos and she's a good person. We don't in any sense make any differentiation between people who do come from an observant background of Taras Mishpacha or from a non-observant background. It's not relevant. Okay, 18. Carry on.
When it comes to the issue of making a celebration for girls who are bat mitzvah, one must not, under any circumstances, make this in a shul, even at night.
He's very upset about doing it in shul. At night means when there's no service, even when there's no service. Yeah.
A shul is not a place to hold an event which is not a mitzvah, and the bat mitzvah ceremony is certainly a non-mitzvah and is in fact mere nonsense without any halakhic source to permit this in a shul.
Right, the word he uses in Hebrew is quite a strong word, which is hevel. Hevel. Hevel means basically nonsense. It's nonsense. The whole business is nonsense. Carry on.
This is all the more true when the actual source is from the Reform and Conservative.
Oh.
If the father wishes to make a party at home, he may do so, but there is no suggestion that this could be considered a suitor. It is merely a birthday party.
Which is not at all what Rav Avadya Yosef said. Rav Avadya Yosef said the fact that she's turning 13 is itself intrinsically a suitor's mitzvah. Carry on. Excuse me. It's my proto-reform roots coming out. Okay, go on.
Indeed, if I had the power to do so, I would also abolish the bar mitzvah for boys, which, as is well known, does not bring anyone closer to Torah and mitzvah, not even the bar mitzvah boy, and not even temporarily.
So in case you think that he's just, you know, having to go at that mitzvah, he doesn't like bar mitzvah either. He's the whole thing is basically a waste of time, and his hevel is nonsense. Yeah.
On the contrary, in many places, it simply leads to Chilul Shabbos and other resources.
Now, it's interesting, every tshuva is also written in the context of the time. This tshuva was written well over 50 years ago. I wonder whether he would say the same thing. It's impossible to know, but I wonder whether in many communities now that they've drifted so far that actually bar mitzvah can now be an opportunity for some people to get more involved in Judaism. Depending on who the rabbi of the shul is, there's a whole... He's writing this before there was a concept of a bal tshuva. You know, people didn't get frum 50 years ago. It didn't happen. Okay, people only went one way, which was out. Now maybe it's not like that. Maybe there are lots of little communities all around America whose rabbis and rebbetzins are actually helping the community to grow and bar and bas mitzvah. So again, when you're reading a tshuva, you have to understand that it comes in a context at a time in a certain place. Therefore, I don't know if he would necessarily say that today, but of course it's impossible to say, and it would be wrong to say. Carry on.
Nevertheless, since there is already a fixed minhag for bar mitzvah, which has a Torah source, it is difficult to abolish.
He would abolish, but he can't abolish it. Carry on.
That kind of thing can be abolished. There's a Torah tradition of marrying more than one wife, and that's been abolished.
No, the Rabbeinu Gershom didn't abolish it. He simply made a cheirim where he told his community that if you do this, you'll be out. Okay, but he didn't make it prohibited. And anyway, nobody effectively is prohibited.
It was not mitzvah at all, however. It was just
correct.
Allowed.
It was never considered to be positive to marry more than one wife. It was always considered to be. Whereas this is actually a positive thing. Alright? Don't worry about it. It's good to have a little bit of a squeeze every now and then. Yeah. Sisters? Dallas?
Okay. So then, isn't that kind of the same thing as the idea of a bat mitzvah in the context?
Meaning was? I don't quite understand where you're driving.
I don't know.
Let's just continue for now. I'll think about what you said. I don't
That's
quite understand. Chayim means it's like a ban. You're excommunicated if you do this. I mean, Rabbeinu Gershon said, I can't make prohibited what the Torah allowed. The Torah allowed more than one wife. But I'm telling you, if you have more than one wife, forget about being part of the Jewish community. You're out. You're out. In the Sephardi community, they never made such a ruling. And therefore, Sephardi men, when they sign the Ketubah, they make a promise in the Ketubah that they won't marry another wife. Unless they're Yemenite, in which case, you know, you have to just... they come to some private arrangement with your husband, okay, that he won't marry another wife. It's very rare that the Yemenites do that anyway. Yeah, it's almost unheard of, even in the Yemenite community. Carry on.
But we should not innovate this for girls without any Torah course at all, and even in the house it would certainly be better to stop it, although there is no answer. But to do it in shul, even at night, at a time other than davening, is prohibited.
So Rav Moshe is quite strong. It's nonsense. Do it at home if you really must. It's a birthday party. But don't think that it has any spiritual significance to do it in a shul. It's bound to do it in a shul, and it's really coming from the from. So he's like the very best parav, probably a little negative. I brought you a source number 19 from the much more sort of extreme kind of negative side, and then we'll see the main source, which I want to see, which is 20. Look at number 19. Just one second. I'll take less questions, because otherwise we won't get to the 3 to 8, which is the real critical one. Just read number 19 quickly, someone. Who's going to read? Tamara, yes? Nice and loud. You won't like this source, by the way, Tamara. You won't like this source. But it's fine, you can read it anyway.
Okay, it is forbidden to arrange gatherings of men and women, young and old, to celebrate a daughter's reaching maturity. Because of several plural missions.
So in other words, he doesn't just say it's not a good idea. He says it's actually prohibited min haTorah to hold a bas mitzvah celebration. Carry on.
Certainly anyone who arranges such a gathering is imitating non-Jews and non-religious Jews. And the Torah has warned us against the following non-Jewish practices.
Chukas ha-goy. It is chukas ha-goy. It's like confirmation. It's, you know, etc.
We must not deviate from our father's customs, even when no shadow of transgression is involved, and certainly not when prohibitions
are involved. I wanted you to see that source really for the last sentence, which is basically expressing the view, if we never did it before, then we should not start doing it now. Even when there's nothing wrong with it. Even when there's nothing wrong with it. This was a view that was said often in the name of the Chasam Sofer, although it's perhaps a bit oversaid in the name of the Chasam Sofer, which is a kind of play on words, which is Chadash Ocham in HaTorah. You heard this before? Now, this is a halachic expression when he's talking about chadash, which means the new grain that grows in a year. This is one of the 613 mitzvahs that if it's chadash, you're not allowed to eat it till Pesach of that year. But it was recoined as a kind of hashkafic expression, which means anything that's new is awesome in our Torah, just because it's new. Certainly if it involves a prohibition, which he feels it does, but even if it's completely neutral, the fact that they never did it before, that's a good reason not to do it now, because that's basically an anti-reform mechanism. The reform are inter-reform, that's why they call reform, because they're interchanging things. Because it's old, if that reform is like the opposite, if it's old then it probably needs changing. Yeah, therefore the Orthodox kind of thrust themselves into reverse gear and said if it's new it's probably awesome. That's one approach. Okay? I need to look at the last source. I want you to save your questions, because I want the last source is long, and you have to have a little bit of brain power left for it. Turn to page 5. Who is this? Now, this is someone that you really need to get to know a little bit. This is someone called the Sridei Eish. Anyone heard of the Sridei Eish? Rav Yaakov Yechiel Weinberg. He was one of the Gedolim in Eastern Europe, and then he went to live in Germany. On page 5, before the Second World War, he was born in Lithuania. He then found himself to be the Rav in the German community, and he very much became part of the German Torah im Derech Eretz approach. Torah im Derech Eretz is often described as neo-orthodoxy. What does that mean? That's a terrible word, really. But Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, decided that one of the appropriate responses, bless you, okay, one of the appropriate responses to the reform movement was not Chadash Asa Min HaTorah, but maybe we need to show how modern new people can be halachically observant in a modern new context. And he introduced this principle called Torah im Derech Eretz in the 1800s and the 1850s, 60s, 70s. And it became very much the methodology of the German Orthodox community. The Eastern European community, especially the Hasidic community, rejected it entirely and went much more for the kind of, if it's new, then it's treif approach. Rav Hirsch didn't do that. Rav Hirsch's movements spawned a number of modern movements, one of which is what we call today modern orthodoxy. Rav Hirsch himself wasn't modern orthodox in any sense, but Rav Hirsch's methodology gave rise to people who were able to reformat that into more of a modern orthodox approach, Torah Umada, as opposed to Torah Umada. We will have a class on understanding exactly what modern orthodoxy is, why it's different from Torah and Derech Eretz, etc. But Rav Weinberg is often seen as being one of the, like, hashkafic founding fathers of modern orthodoxy. He's not himself modern orthodox by any definition, but of course all these definitions have no meaning if you go back more than 40, 50 years. You know, nobody, if you ask somebody, go back in time into 1930, say, are you Haredi? They will just look at you with complete blank stares and say, well, what does that mean? Never heard of it. All of these things which we feel now are the way it always has been, of course, are all not the way it always has been. Let's have a look at what Rav Weinberg says. There was a very good book written, his biography, by someone called Mark Shapiro, who writes quite a lot of material in America. I don't necessarily agree with everything he writes on everything he says, but this particular book is a very interesting book. It is called what did he call it? Rav, the Sri De Asia, something like that, between the yeshiva world and modern orthodoxy. He's like a bridge person. Let's have a look what he says. I'd like a nice strong reader to read this thing. Melissa, you're on again?
I'm on, okay.
Okay, number five. Now look at carefully what he says, because this is very much, I think, going to resonate with the way that you feel.
Okay. There are those who argue against the many thoughts in this generation, that they deviate from the practice of previous generations who never did such things.
He's really dealing with the last source that we just saw. Yeah.
But in truth, this is not an argument for previous generations. There was not a need to be involved with the education of girls, because every Jew was full of Torah and the fear of heaven, and the atmosphere of every Jewish town was filled with the fragrance and spirit of Judaism.
I mean, just stop there for a second. He is slightly exaggerating in the sense he's not trying to pretend that, you know, up until, you know, 1900, every Jewish town was like Fiddler on the Roof. You know, it's not like that. Even if you take a snapshot of Judaism in the year 1900, vast, vast amounts of it were already secular, especially in the big towns. Maybe if you take a snapshot in 1700, it might be different. But he's saying basically that mitzvah was never needed because there was never a lack. And that's definitely too true. Carry on.
Okay, girls who grew up in a Jewish home absorbed into themselves the spirit of Judaism without any active steps, almost as if they took it in with their mother's milk.
Which is how most girls absorbed everything educationally in those days. They didn't have formal educational systems. Carry on.
But now things have changed greatly. The influence of the street has uprooted any attachment to Judaism from the hearts of young people. Girls are educated in non-Jewish or non-religious schools, which make no effort to implant within the hearts of their students a love of Torah and the holy practices of authentic Judaism. Now we must therefore focus our energies on girls' education.
He's talking about the situation before the Second World War in Poland, Eastern Europe, where girls from Hasidic families, from very ultra-Orthodox families, as we would call them today, the guys were being educated in cheder, and the girls were being educated in gymnasium, in non-Jewish schools, where they were extremely well-educated in biology, science, humanities, etc., and went on to get BAs, MAs, PhDs. And of course, as far as Torah is concerned, Torah had nothing to offer them educationally. And therefore, it's not surprisingly, they just reject it. In fact, the greatest movement away from Judaism was amongst the women. There are interesting stories of, there's an interesting story brought down by the Torah Tamima. His father, the Aruch Shulchan, went for Rosh Hashanah to visit one of the senior Rabbonim in Eastern Europe. He got home on Rosh Hashanah night. And this was in Eastern Europe, one of the senior Rabbonim, and the house was dark, there was no one in the house. He says, where's your family? He says, my wife and daughters are at the theatre. And then, can you imagine such a thing? That the representative of the town was at the theatre with her kids, and whereas the Rav and his sons had just got back from Shul and Rosh Hashanah. It was like a dysfunctionality that was driving the girls away from Judaism. Okay? And therefore he felt that this approach was just fueling that retreat of girls away from Judaism. Carry on.
It pains the heart that in secular education, the study of languages, literature, and the natural and social sciences are as conscientiously taught to girls as to boys. But in religious education, the study of Tanakh, the ethical teachings of Chazal, and in practical training in those mitzvot which women are obligated to carry out, we abandon them entirely. Fortunately, the leaders of the Jewish people rose to deal with this major problem in the last generation and set up religious education institutions Torah and give support to Jewish girls. The establishment of the Beit Yaakov school network is one of the greatest achievements of our generation.
He's talking in the 1950s, I believe. He survived the Holocaust, actually. Very interesting story, which I won't get into now. He's looking back to the 20s and the 30s when Beit Yaakov was set up. You have to understand, to you and I today, the concept of the Beit Yaakov movement is like ultra-establishment, button-down blue shirts, and very kind of traditional. Go back 70, 80 years, Beit Yaakov was radical, radical, radical. Sora Schneerer was someone who departed radically from the methodologies of women's education, bless you, and she was opposed greatly by most elements within the Jewish people. She had support from a few senior people, the Chofetz Chaim and the Gera Rebbe particularly, but most people just felt that she was like off the edge. And now Beis Yaakov has become the frumest of the frum. This is a very interesting observation as to how times have changed, which is very interesting, and how things have moved a lot within the Jewish world, even though people kind of think and sometimes pretend that they haven't. But anyway, so now he's going to talk about Bat Mitzvah. Carry on, Melissa.
Clear logic and the principles of education virtually require equal celebration for a girl when she reaches the age of responsibility for his vote. The difference which is made in the celebration for a boy and a girl upon attaining maturity makes a very hurtful impression on the feelings of a maturing girl who in all other areas has attained equality.
It's a very interesting statement. It sounds quite radical, quite almost, you know, almost feminist, although he's not in any sense a feminist in the modern sense. These labels also mean nothing 50, 60 years ago. But he is just making an observation, which is there's nothing halakhically wrong with bat mitzvah. And if you don't have it, think of the downside. The downside of a girl being told, effectively, by omission, that she's less important than her brothers, and her mitzvahs are less important than her brothers' mitzvahs. Says, what message is she going to get? She's told all day long that she's just as good as the guys, and she can get a PhD like they can, and when it comes to mitzvahs, she doesn't matter. Now, of course, that's not what's really being said, but that's how she perceives it, or she could perceive it. And therefore, he's saying, how could you ever not have a bat mitzvah? Yeah?
Actually, I met a girl during Shabbos, her name is Esther, she's from Albania, which is a big example. So I was saying, you know, I just went recently, and only had three mitzvahs or something like that, less casual. So she said, no, we have all the mitzvahs. We really have all the mitzvahs. And it was, she said it was so much love, the Torah and the holiness of the mitzvahs. It was so beautiful.
How old is this girl?
She's a big couple. She must have been
like a young girl.
Yeah.
That's nice. You know, you should know, by the way, Beit Yaakov now is such a broad spectrum of schools, it almost doesn't mean anything for someone to say, I went to a Beit Yaakov school. If you go in America to America and you look, there are Beit Yaakovs that are very, very effective and efficient and instill love and Torah and all that. There are Beit Yaakovs which are just basically a disaster. It's like in every school system. So the fact that someone says, I went to Beit Yaakov, actually again means very little. It's like someone saying, I went to Yeshiva High School. Well, what does that mean? Not much. Well, which school did you go to? So, anyway, carry on, Melissa.
Okay, but although I am inclined to permit the celebration of the Bat Mitzvah, nevertheless, I agree with the view of Rav Moshe Feinstein that the celebration should not be in a shul, even at night and even where there are no men there, but rather in a private house or the shul hall.
Also, in other words, he doesn't want you to make it into a service. A special service, because that, he said already, is going too far. Like, we're going to all get together, we're going to say Tehillim, and we're going to mark it with some special reading, or what have you.
So that resonates?
Yes, that definitely, the messing around with the format of the shul service has always been a red line in the Orthodox world. Because that already is something which is a very public display of trying to fiddle with things.
Isn't that boy making and having an aliyah the same thing, except the fact that it doesn't resonate with the reform movement?
No, because a boy having an aliyah has always traditionally been part of the format of the public shul service.
What's always?
Going back thousands of years, boys have had aliyot. I mean, 100%. Whereas girls, making some special service for the girls, like inventing a new service.
Okay.
He wants to draw the line then and says that's... Yeah.
So, I have a bit of a question about that. I didn't have that. In South Africa, which is a very Orthodox community, reform is very much...
Mm-hmm.
It's become very much a custom that, let's say, on a Sunday or however often it is, that they have like Orthodox shuls, they have like a bunch of girls doing something in the shul, and like, they'll read, whatever they read, not like a... I mean, every
right.
shul does something different. But they do it inside the shul, and it's very Orthodox shul.
Right, right. Things are, it's like, well, in England they call it a bat chayil. They have like a shul service, and they sing, they have this and that and the other.
Yeah, they read, they'll write something about like what women should be doing in the life, you know.
Some celebration of women's lives, in short. Yeah, he wouldn't be happy with that. But again, this is not the only word on it, and there are those who said that, you know, as long as you're not trying to fiddle with the shul service. For example, do you get a woman to give a Dvar Torah in shul? So what's wrong with a woman giving a Dvar Torah? There's nothing wrong with a woman giving a Dvar Torah. I mean, it's wonderful. The question is, though, do you get a woman to stand up?
That's a good job.
That's a great job. On the other hand, what do you do in the... I was in... when I was in Washington this year, so I davened on Shabbos a couple of times in Ken Mill Synagogue in Maryland. Yeah, in Silver Spring. And so the rabbi, one Shabbat, didn't give a drosha, didn't give a sermon. So I thought, well, there's no drosha. That's all right, get to the kiddush a bit quicker, whatever it is. And then, of course, at the end of the service, up stands a woman and gives a whole drosha. very, you know, on her side, on the women's side, you know. So is that called messing with the service? They've obviously drawn that line that that's not messing with the service. They obviously decided they wouldn't have a woman stand up in the normal sermon slot before Musa, thank you, because that would be. But these are all difficult decisions to make. Where do you draw the? What time does this class end?
6:10.
Really? Fine, you better read fast, Melissa.
To raise and educate her children, to encourage and support her husband in learning Torah, keeping the photo, to make sure to look to marry a man who is Kama Hakam and
Look, he's not a raging feminist by any means. He's still quite traditionalist in terms of women's lives and roles and things like that, but he feels the bar mitzvah is the time to instill this. Carry on.
All of these issues constitute strong reasons to permit the celebration of the bar mitzvah, even according to the halakhic opinion of the Vilna Gaon, who is very strict in such matters.
Okay, carry on.
Okay. In practice, the matter depends on motivation and intentions of those people who wish to innovate new customers, such as the bat mitzvah celebration. Are their intentions Lashem Shemayim or Bat Mitzvah?
And this is really where he puts us to draw the line. He doesn't go for Chodesh Asa Min HaTorah. If it's new, it's trade. He says, look, let's look where these people are coming from. Are they just trying to push an agenda? Whether it's a reform agenda or a feminist agenda, we might say today. But it's the same question with women's minyanim. It's going to be the same issue. And it's going to be very hard sometimes to judge that. But he's saying that's, we're going to not draw black and white lines, but grey lines to try and find a middle road. Carry on.
Indeed, I am not aware that amongst those who are God-fearing and prohibit the celebration of Bat Mitzvah are those who pay no attention to logical considerations and questions of religious custom and do not even engage in halakhic analysis, but rather judge solely in accordance with the feelings of the heart.
No, they say it's osa. Forget it. It's treif, because it's new.
For the Jewish heart, which clings to the traditions of parents and teachers, it is against any change in religious custom.
He's saying, I understand. People don't like change because people want to... Judaism is a traditional religion. There's no question about it. We believe in Masorah and in tradition. However,
nevertheless, these people should not forget that the hearts of those who seek to permit this new custom of celebrating Bat Mitzvah speak with the concern for religious education of Jewish girls who, due to the circumstances of life in this generation, are in the greatest need of spiritual and ethical support and encouragement when they arrive at the age of Bat Mitzvah.
And that's his bottom line. So our celebration of Bat Mitzvah today really depends on which of these views you follow. In some communities, it's really considered to be completely posel treif. It's the most treif of the treif of the treif. You go to the Hasidic communities and see if they celebrate publicly the girls' bat mitzvahs. I'm sure you'll find that they don't. In the standard Haredi world today in America, I think it's on the rise, actually. It's much more common than it was. Rav Moshe was very parav about it, if not somewhat negative. But I think that it's actually marching in more of a done thing. In the modern Orthodox world, I think they picked on the Sri Deish and said, that's it.
Validation.
I knew there was a word out there. This is a validation of our approach to modernity, which is to try and incorporate the good whilst keep the negative at bay, and therefore that mitzvah celebrations became very much part of the modern world. I once, just as a postscript, I once gave this shiur many years ago in a shul in London. And people came up to me at the end and said, thank you very much, it was very nice, whatever. A number of years after that, I was approached by a man in Yerushalayim who said to me, I was at your shir a few years ago in London about Bat Mitzvah. My daughter was coming up for Bat Mitzvah. We weren't proposing to do anything for her Bat Mitzvah. And on the basis of that shir, we changed our entire plans and made a Bat Mitzvah celebration. I don't know if I did a good thing or a bad thing, but I did something. You never know what comes out of what people hear in a class. So he recognized me in a Beis HaMedrash, and he came up to me, introduced himself. I didn't know who he was. And he said, I am X, you don't know who I am, but my daughter now had a bat mitzvah because of your class. So we shall see. Anyway, that's that. I hope you found that of some interest. Next week, Bezos Hashem, we will go on to other fields.
Thank you.